You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good, The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com. And streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Boardwalk Empire After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Boardwalk Empire After Show.
Okay, so Bing is for doing, and we are here doing another AfterBuzz TV episode. Boardwalk Empire, Season 4, Episode 2, entitled Resignation. I'm your host, Kevin Undergaro. I'm very happy to be back at full power. Let's go around the table, starting with you, Kristen.
Hey, I'm Kristen Carney. I'm glad to be back. I'm so excited. It's Boardwalk time.
Bethany Jaber here for the fourth season. And I'm joining for the fourth season, Sarah Stretton. I'm so excited that you guys are here this week. We missed you last week.
Yeah, we did.
You guys did great. I listened and I loved listening.
Thank you.
I gave us a C.
Really?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe I have really low expectations.
No, I was surprised you said that. No, because it was just a lot of information to digest and so much going on. And, you know, they shoot the show so dark. You know, just the cinematography is so dark. And so when we have the screening room that we watch it in, I actually couldn't see my paper. I couldn't see what I was writing. So anyway.
It's so dark you can't really even see the show.
No, it's the way they shoot it. It's shot beautifully, by the way. Yeah. But
it's supposed to keep you in the mystery.
It's gorgeous. No, I love it. Takes me right to that time. And when they did the Onyx Club scene where Bethany kind of made a noise, you want to be there.
Yes.
You want to be there.
I can't say enough that, you know, I know all the money's going away in TV and they're just too many places to consume right now and not enough advertiser money and it's getting scary. And so I just applaud HBO for doing this show. It gets good numbers. It gets the critical acclaim, but it does not get the numbers of, say, Walking Dead, Sons of Anarchy, Breaking Bad. It doesn't get those numbers. So I know, Bethany,
I have no idea why. I'm completely perplexed by this.
Because it's so complex.
But
I hear from people they're like, too many characters, too many subplots, and I'm just lost. And by the way, it doesn't make it a bad show. It mm-hmm. just makes it really hard for certain people to follow.
I think everybody should start now in the fourth season because all of the really great characters have survived, and I feel like it's stripped down. Because usually, like, season 1 through 3, like, it usually takes a few episodes to really get mm-hmm. in. But this season 4, man, they have started off with a bang.
I agree. Yeah.
You know where everyone's standing so far, it seems like, at the beginning.
Well, I think, but, you know, when you say stripped down, just by our notes. Normally I have 3 pages of notes because there's so many characters and I have 1 page.
No, you know? I mean, the strong are surviving and still standing and they're really interesting to watch.
I just feel like the dynamics they're bringing in is great. It's like the variety. In season 1 and season 2, we had a lot of strong characters, mm-hmm. but all from very similar backgrounds. Now we're getting people, you can just hear it in the accents of the show. It's like every single person now talks differently. Instead of your group of New Yorkers, your group of people from Chicago, now it's like you're getting almost the world's being tied in, I feel like. And they can go broader, so I'm excited.
I also like, you know, we're taking time to get into these other worlds. Mm-hmm. And so maybe next week we'll go back to New York. But I felt like last year it was, in one episode, you'd have New York, New Jersey, Chicago.
Yeah.
And so many other things. And I think I'm glad that we're spending a little bit more time.
No, it feels like the writers are taking their time in laying the pipe, so to speak, rather than in short bursts of exposition scene after scene. Like you're saying, it's like you get introduced to a new character this season and they're really indulging us.
Well, what I'm grateful for, and I was talking to Sarah about last week, is I thought it ended so strong last year that I almost was like, God, I don't want the series to end. But at the same time, it just was such a great ending that I was concerned that now we're going to see, say, Nucky's demise, mm-hmm. or we have to create new villains. And that's always kind of obvious. But as I'm seeing now, they are just laying down some great groundwork in a way that I never would have guessed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm loving it.
I agree.
And as usual, because the writing's so smart, it all intersects. Anyway, so let's get right into it. Let's start with our friend Richard, who I know everyone at the table loves. Well, Sarah, do you love him? We always love Richard.
We went over this a little bit last week. I love Richard.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I am on his team. I need him to stay around for forever. And I like the Emma dynamic, bringing his sister in. We're seeing big changes. And she seems to be kind of taking control and being the man, mm-hmm. like his rock now.
Right.
We've always seen him like fall in love with something, whether it be an aspect of family or not. And now it's his real family. And I feel like he's allowed to now be vulnerable.
Exactly.
And that's why he's breaking down. But great. She's a great addition.
I agree. I mean, all the relationships were really mirroring as far as family was a big centering topic here. Family and loyalty. I mean, and who is more loyal than your sister or your brother?
Right.
And that's really all that's left at the end of the day. And it's really nice to see their dynamic play out. And, I can't even get to the dog. I won't even get there.
I know. Sorry. We'll talk about it.
I'm jumping it.
But, you know, Mike August, one of our super fans and contributors, mm-hmm. We have catches of the week that we'll be doing later, thanks to Mike. But, you know, one of the things he had mentioned was, you know, how the show's in the season is showing the strength of women.
Mm-hmm.
So now when you think of Richard's sister, like you said, she is the rock. She's the one saying to him, okay, great, you're back. Don't just disappear again or that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the one who has the, give me the gun. I'll handle the business.
And you know what I love is that she found Richard's gun, which means she was picking up the logs and she was making the fire,
mm-hmm.
which I think is so awesome. You know, I mean, she
very
obviously
astute.
Is fending for herself.
Right.
But
it's also just a knowledge thing. The fact that during their first conversation, she says, I won't ask any questions. But it's not because she doesn't want to know. That's almost because she formulates the answers on her own. She can figure out almost what he's up to if she really wanted, because she has been holding down this household, and obviously we've heard about her crazy year, and now she's about to have this baby. She's widowed, but it's the knowledge and the power and the sorry that she had to kill the dog.
That's okay.
She has strength on so many levels.
Yeah, she does.
And you didn't see her whimper at all to match the dog's whimpers. She didn't. If it were me, who I consider myself a very weak woman at times, I would be down holding and crying before ever being able to make a decision like that. And she didn't. And I know she had those feelings, but she knows that you can't cross those lines if you have to survive the way she has to. So she just kept her face exactly still and pulled the trigger. There was nothing sad to her, you know, in her eyes about it. It's just, this is what you do.
And then, of course, we have Richard now, who we've always seen him be that person to pull the trigger without looking back. And this episode, we get the total change, and it seems like it's because, obviously because of her,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's going to haunt them. It's going to come back to haunt them both, and he's bringing her into his mess, and we found out finally that it was actually a contract killing, $1,000 a piece, but family trumps all. Any number,
right.
He could have said any number to beat him, it doesn't matter. It was just for the kids. But I think that's foreshadowing how it's going to hurt his family with what he's creating and how he's trying to escape. And you can already see it falling apart with the dog passing away.
Well, that's why you're always with Richard, because you see him trying to escape and trying desperately.
Yeah.
Like he said, I don't want any more of it, when he handed the gun back to his sister for the dog. And now he's going to get pulled right back in.
Always.
It's like you just want to go, no, no, and grab him by, like, you know, and just hug him. You just want to hug him and pull him in.
Is he,
keep him
but
safe.
You know what? Is he ignoring his calling? Is his calling really just to kick ass and be that guy?
You just like,
yeah, especially on the show.
No, I don't. No, no, no,
like,
no, 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 no. That's actually not true. I'm asking you, is it because he keeps going away from his calling? Is that what he's supposed to do?
I mean, that's a big theme in today's episode, isn't it? You know, what is your calling? I mean, I'm sure Michael August will write to us about all the different quotes from the Bible, because I have
right. There's so
I have no idea
many.
Where to begin with
right.
those.
And so, speaking
but,
of Bible,
mm-hmm.
Samson, the dog's name is Samson.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know the story of Samson and Delilah from
no,
the Bible.
No, tell me it, please.
Well, I mean, I can simplify it
because
I'm not a biblical scholar.
I wouldn't understand the higher level of
any means. But Samson was this character in the Old Testament, and he was very strong, and he basically like did God's work. He was super, had all the super strength, and this woman ends up talking him into cutting his hair. And one of the things he had learned was that his hair was the source of his power, given to him by God. And she kind of seduces him and talks him into cutting the hair. He cuts the hair. He loses his power.
Ooh.
And by the end, I think he gets his hair back, and he kind of does what he has to do. But needless to say, so that's why I was trying to find what we know. Yeah. This is such good writing that none of this stuff is ever thrown out there. And I know there's like with this and Breaking Bad, there are fans who think that, oh, you guys are reading too deep. No. Like, when you're a really good writer, there's so much subtext here.
Absolutely.
So I don't, you know, like, I don't know why. We can discuss it. Like, what, you know, it's someone who's strong and then has lost their powers. Is that Richard? You know?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
We know through his accident.
I mean, for mercy is another theme that was happening all through the episode. And, you know, it is merciful to put something, an animal, a person,
right,
out of their misery.
Right.
You know, and in contrast, in the last episode, Knox does not do that to his partner.
Mm-mm.
But to be merciful just kept showing up in everybody's relationship throughout. I mean, we could visit each relationship and find that happening. But who is more loyal than a dog, really? No one. I mean, you can leave them at home all day long, and all of a sudden you'll come home and they'll be like, I missed you so much.
Right.
I'm here for
is that,
you.
But is that Richard?
Maybe. Maybe it is.
Richard's loyal to the people he cares about.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Like a dog.
He's
would
second
be.
To dogs on loyalty.
Absolutely.
So funny. So, you know, Bethany, you had to leave the room because you knew what was coming. No, but I'll tell you, before, probably 10 years ago, you know, 15 years ago, before I had my dogs, I would have been like, doo, 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 doo. And I'm the same way. It just makes me so upset.
I can't. Well, because they're just so kind and so loyal,
no,
and they
and
will
helpless
not hurt
in that
you.
Way. No. Ugh.
I can't deal with
it. Anyway. Are the last things that deserve to suffer.
Yeah. So I feel you on that. Let's talk about the world of Van Alden.
Who's now, should we refer to him as George?
George Mueller. You're right. It is. I guess we should start calling him George Mueller.
I feel like we kind of have to because everyone.
And he has changed. He is a very different person than Van Alden.
He is, but I still love Van Alden. That
he's
initial
amazing.
Season one maniac, just silent maniac, was so amazing to me. And I mean, he's still that, but. He is still that.
And speaking of another strong female, his wife.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
She's been my favorite throughout the show.
She was so good at. Not manipulating, but getting what she wanted from him because she knew how to talk to him. And she first referred to him when they were getting the furniture in. She referred to him as husband. And then when she really wanted to, talk to him on a different level, she said his name. She just said Nelson. She no longer said husband. And we've never heard her say.
Oh, wow. It's a great pickup.
Yeah, we've never heard her say Nelson before.
She's my favorite wife. That's who I want to marry.
And why
are you looking at Sarah? Really?
Should.
Like, why wouldn't you want to marry her? She's amazing.
I don't know. I'm not in love with her. I don't know what it is. Like you said, she's been like carrying you through. But for some reason, I just feel like she's going to make these little mistakes that are just going to hurt him and hurt their family, being that she's like obsessed with money and that she called him Nelson when that's not the name they're going by anymore. I just, part of me feels like I thought she was smart when she started, she helped him out with the liquor and kind of took charge of that and put him in this new business for them to get money. But now I feel like I'm worried about her. I think that she's going to either blow his cover. I honestly think it's going to be her fault. So part of me doesn't like her just because I have the suspicion.
This is what you did last week. You had to edumacate me. Let me just be stupid and play along with this. No.
I could be totally wrong.
No, you're not wrong. That's exactly what's going to happen.
I just love her.
Can't you
so
just
much.
Let me be a stupid fan? Yeah, but it's interesting. You know, he'd said when they were talking about building the house, you know, you get a saw and a hammer, and he said, I just followed the instructions. And I think that's him just like, I want to stick by the book, but it's not going to work, buddy.
That's his theme of the episode. He's right. Always talking about instructions.
Well, by the book. That's why he was a really good military guy. By the Bible. You're right. Even bigger than law enforcement, the Bible.
Right. And the funny part of that is in like the first three images we got of him in the show, with him delivering flowers and then delivering a punch. Right after he delivers the punch is when he says the line about making a vow.
He does.
And it's great, that juxtaposition where you put it in there, that he's crossed the line into kind of, you know, dealing with the wrong side of the law, but he still has those underlying morals that are carrying him through, and like how that's going to affect him.
It just creates a storm inside him. I mean, it's hot air and cold air, and they just collide, you know, and I always look forward for that collision.
Let's talk about when the Capone brothers surrounded him. You see how big he is physically. Like, he's wound up.
Dude.
He's a very big guy. Like, he's ready to go at some point.
Mm-hmm. But the growl.
But the fact that they kind of have him in this nebbish position that, you know, season one, nobody muscles him around.
No.
But it's like the elephant who doesn't know what strength it has until it, you know, freaks out and then needs to be, you know, killed or something. It's like he doesn't know how strong he is, how strong
anymore.
He's
forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he's so shame-based. He's so, you know, from the killing and so having to hide out from what he did in the past. But it's interesting because that's we know he's a ticking time bomb. Right?
I think that's why his growl, mm-hmm. I can't even say the word, at the end was so fantastic when they're all fighting in the row, and he just gives this, I don't know what
it is. Guttural.
And we're like, okay, there you are.
Yep.
There are the threads from the last season.
And he made
seasons.
A new friend.
He did.
One of the Capone brothers.
And again, with the brothers.
Wait, so you think that was a friend? It wasn't just, Frank's not just patronizing him? I mean, Frank's really smart. You can see he's the smart. I don't know if historically it was like that, but he's the one who knows Al is like rageful and saying, no, wait, we can get information out of this guy. Like, mm-hmm. this
and Frank
is good.
Sees the potential in him. But then when you get to the fight scene, when George kind of saves Frank's butt from getting really beat up, you can kind of see they make eye contact. There's a little bit of a friendship growing, and being in one episode, we see them twice together and escalating relationship. I think that he does have an ally with the Capone brothers.
It's so going to go down between O'Bannon and Capone, and he's going to be in the middle of it.
Exactly. But based on his relationship with O'Bannon that we saw this episode with like the pollen and the flowers and him basically insulting him.
Yeah.
And telling me
O'Bannon's just a smart ass. You know, he doesn't know. I don't see. He doesn't have that good gangster quality of knowing when to turn on the charm. Like you see, Capone is starting to learn it, but then when to pull back and kind of be a.
It's very similar to how Jip treated Chalky versus the way Nucky treated.
Yes,
Chalky.
Yeah,
like they just get each other. There's like more of a respect.
But the best guys like that, they are respectful, and that's how you know it's a better way to do business rather than to be just a bully. You know, eventually it wears itself out.
They say sociopaths are very charming people.
Yeah, the best. The best. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are you naming the florist as a sociopath?
Why are you looking at me like that? Krista, maybe she's looking at you. Are you the sociopath?
I think she was.
No.
I'm a sociopath.
Capone.
I think
Capone,
I'm sociopathic.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say sociopath.
But again, we have the theme of family and brothers. You know, we have Emma and Harrow. There's that sibling bond, and then the Capone brothers. There's that loyalty, those boundaries.
Right.
That you know, when we look at Nucky, he's always struggled with them. But these people, they've got them. They have their family boundaries, and they stick with them, and it's been working. It's working right now.
Well, remember, Jip didn't really have. He had a family, but there was no connection with them.
No,
he hated them. Mm-hmm. They hated him.
No,
it was great.
In his family, it was the women that were dominant.
Right.
So when you focus on their,
but he wasn't close to them. He wasn't like. You know, did it appear that he was close to the sisters and the mother?
We didn't see a lot of the sisters and mother. But when we did see them, he was just like undermined, like undercut. Every sentence he said was
right. Well, again, we've seen a lot of strong females in this, which I think is very so interesting at a time where, you know, there was no voting. It was, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I guess if you vote Democrat,
no, there's voting now. Yeah, 1920.
That's based, and this interesting. You can see that now the fight for politics, where it's we were talking about the Muppet Babies growing up, and now you see Al's making his rise to power.
I'm so excited. Stephen Granby stole my heart. Oh, he's so fabulous.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's gemazing.
More political. Are we going to move over to Knox?
I want to talk to you about Agent Knox because, for me, being a history major, I was definitely thrown for a loop at the end of the kind of Agent Knox story tonight. But we see him, and he makes a joke with Nucky, which, of course, Nucky's like, "You'll never see me again. This is the only guy I'm going to deal with." Kudos to Nucky to look into him.
Yes,
right.
He has the feeling. He has a feeling.
Right.
Well, it's a very wary Nucky now. I mean, this is somebody who was it the last episode? He began in the dark, hiding behind doorways.
Right.
I mean, this is not an exposed man flaunting his whereabouts and his money about town anymore. He's a changed man at this point, and he has two careful people that he trusts.
Yeah,
his brother and Eddie.
Yeah,
and that's it.
And he's living by.
But beyond that,
he ended last season saying, "I'm only going to work with the people I trust."
Right. But he heard something. Don't you think he heard something in the exchange to follow?
Exactly. Absolutely. I thought that was
what was it? What made him? Just instinct, or was it just?
It was just, I think Nucky survives on instinct and an ability to read people and understand how to communicate with them. It even goes into when you see him with Dr. Valentine, how he reads that situation and is able to negotiate the power in the room. It's his intuition. That's what's made him successful. That's how he gets involved in everything. It's because he reads people so well.
Well, so without getting into Nucky, because we have plenty to talk about with him, talking about Agent Knox showing up with the corrupt judge in this meeting. And then, lo and behold, we see a young J. Edgar Hoover, which is like, oh, my God.
Played by Eric Syatt.
Why? You know him?
Yeah, I know him from town. But he's a lovely actor. He's been in a lot of different things, but it's nice to see him breaking ground, so to speak, in a really great role as the young J. Edgar Hoover.
And this is how Hoover made his name.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
This is how he ascended to power was fighting with the mob during Prohibition.
And oftentimes, I don't know where I remember reading this, he would wait and be like, no, I want to be there for the bus.
That's
to
all
take
it was.
Picture.
Well, you know, it was.
He wants the glory.
It was so self-serving and just gross. I mean, it was, you know, seemed like for me, my, you know, limited studies of Hoover was that he, you know, he had this crazy reign. I mean, he reigned until 1972 until he died.
Wow.
So now just imagine like a guy like back then in the early 20s, and then he takes power and basically doesn't look back at all these presidents who try to get him out, can't get him out. They all try, and every time they try, he keeps his job or does God only knows worse, like with Kennedy, we don't know. But I mean, just a bad guy. And it seemed like he didn't really do much in terms of justice. Mm-hmm. It was all about feathering his own nest and getting his publicity and kind of protecting his little, you know, his...
Which isn't very different
I know.
Capone or any of the other characters.
I would say that...
I thought you could say it's not very different than most politicians, sad.
But any of our leading men here, they're just on opposite sides of the fence, but they really want the same thing.
But at least Capone's honest.
Yeah, right. I was going to say,
Capone,
I feel like...
Puts
it's like
it out
that,
there.
That's it. That's it. I'm a gangster and that's what I do.
Right.
And you know what, I'll buy some, and you know what, I'll open a soup kitchen when I need to, and I'll do little things for people in the neighborhood. But, you know, with Hoover, it's like, no, it was just under the guise of, oh, I'm trying to help the country, and no, it was about him.
That room of people is scarier to me than all of the gangsters.
Yeah, good for you, because they are scarier.
Exactly.
So much scarier.
Ooh, you don't know who they're in cahoots with.
Nope.
You don't know who's tied into this. I mean, we've had so many different politicians we brought on the show. And, I mean, when we, for instance, like, Gelson was brought on to look into Agent Knox. And I'm wondering if he was lying and just reading the story verbatim or if they actually planted that information. Like, whose side is he on? And he's an informant of Nucky.
Yeah,
so.
I want to believe that there's something to the planting of the information because when Nucky called to verify, he said... whatever the town was outside of in Iowa
Adkins.
City, Adkins. Mm-hmm. And then Nucky said, and that's 14 miles outside of Iowa City.
Cedar Rapids.
He said if you say so. And it was like he didn't actually have the exact mileage and he didn't want to say, or if he did, he didn't want to say it because it wouldn't have aligned with what he had told Agent Knox had told Nucky, which was 14 miles or so. Like, I feel like there was...
So wait, so you think that...
it seemed like there was a hole in that.
Well, we know that... God, what do you guys...
Gelson?
Our favorite Stephen Root's character, we know he plays...
Gaston Means
plays all sides of the fence. We know that historically, we know from last season. Do you feel that he's also in cahoots with...
I think he could be because he's pinned everyone against everybody.
Yeah.
And I just hope Nucky doesn't stop there to, you know, looking into Agent Knox.
I think from anything he should have learned by now, not to trust him.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm guessing from a writing's perspective, we're it's an unseen force. We just haven't been hit by them yet. Maybe that will happen with Mr. Gaston Means, but I don't know. I think he might be blown away too. These seem like some young guns that are coming in, and
right.
Gaston Means is old, and so
I feel that way because Knox came out of nowhere last episode. Mm-hmm. With this information and knowledge of the world. And I just think he hasn't stopped there. And I think he's just a screwed up character. Like you said, he's what's his name from Breaking Bad?
Who from Breaking Bad?
Who shoots the boy.
Oh, Todd?
Yeah, he's like the Todd.
Todd, are you in the booth? There he is. That's our Todd Steven. He's the Todd of Breaking Bad, just so you know. Todd of AfterBuzz, excuse me.
He's a young Van Alden. I mean, this is where Van Alden really was in the beginning, as far as his wide-eyed certainty, his perspective of what is right and what is wrong.
See, I think he has a twisted mentality. Yeah. I don't trust him.
Knox, I'm not so sure that he's just not going to play all sides. This is the sociopath.
Yeah,
to me,
sociopath.
Like, yeah. I think he's going to have a lot of fun going back and forth. I don't think he's just going to be up Hoover's behind. I think he'll play all sides.
I don't see him as a Van Alden living by the Bible or anything like that. I don't think he has any moral compass.
Van Alden, psychopath. He's this guy's sociopath.
Right.
He's almost like an evolved Van Alden.
Yeah, but
like
a psychopath will focus on something and fixate on it, and the sociopath just doesn't care. So, what?
He's dangerous,
cold-blooded. So, it's interesting. So, we're building up all these great... Just what I was afraid they weren't going to be able to do well, they're doing very well. Mm-hmm. We're building up these new villains, but it's not... I thought, like, first episode, it would be, like, another Jip just waltzing in and, you know, putting a gun to someone's throat. And, nope. Like, last season we saw with Jip. And, to me, they're laying down some great groundwork. And so, we're going to be seeing a lot of him.
I'm just thinking,
Sierra.
Well, if we have all these villains, I feel like we need to like line up our troops to get ready. I mean, we're seeing Eddie really step up to be like more than Nucky.
All right, let's go over to let's talk about the world of Nucky and let's talk about Eddie. As we're talking about servants, that's biblical as well. Mm-hmm. And did you see, you know, some of the Bible passages that were read were mentioning, you know, when we will talk about Dr. Narcisse, but he's talking about servants and whatnot, and who is not a better servant than Eddie? And we see Eddie really struggling to do his job, and we see Nucky being empathetic about it and feeling responsible.
Exactly. I mean, what was ringing like to me, what I was saying, is that I love Eddie, first of all.
The best.
The way that, obviously he's been a servant, like, just by job, but the way he treats him is as an equal, versus when you see Dr. Valentine talk about Chalky being like a servant that makes him below. It's all about status. It's about,
which is why ultimately
only king.
He will lose.
Exactly. In this game of chess that kept getting pointed out all night. But that goes back to Nucky's character and like why I feel like as bad as things get and things he does, we can still like him because he does have a feeling of like equality and he goes for people's rights. And even back to season one when he was helping with the women's campaign, even though it was for personal
just awesome
personal goals, he continues to build these friendships and these relationships while maintaining power, still treating people as friends. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Talking about Eddie had the great quote, "Everything is always something," which I think is going to mean something, you know, in this, because every little detail, everything, you know, all these little things, the behavior, the relationships, it means something. It's not just a matter of, okay, you're my butler or manservant.
But it also makes things that seem so important not as important, because he said everything is only something. Because he'll say, oh, it's just some, it's only some eggs, or it's only someone's life. You know, it almost equalized all right. these things and put them all on one level.
It was very poetic.
Yeah.
All episode. Well, my favorite was when they were in the car and he started talking.
I was just about to mention this. Go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
No, because maybe I'm not going to say the right thing.
I don't know how to quote exactly, but talking about the children and this guy and putting Neki everywhere, I just felt like he was reaching for his dreams this episode. Mm-hmm. And it was coming through in his, the poetic nature of how he was speaking to everyone. And I'm glad that he's now stepped up in business and that he is going to have a role in whether it be the money. I don't think he's going to plot. I don't think Eddie can plot. I feel like that would just...
Well, okay. Before we get, because I have lots of questions about that, where Eddie's going to go. But what I found interesting was when Neki met with the mayor, he yes. brought Eddie into the conversation, and Eddie was, like, stunned. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was Neki saying, you know what, you are very valuable to me. Even though you can't pour the coffee, you're not making the eggs the right way, this is how much I do respect you and how valuable you are. Do you agree? Is that why he did that?
Absolutely. And when the mayor was breaking ground, he was talking about God and God being merciful and all of this stuff. And he was going on. And then when the mayor enters the car, Eddie defines Neki as God.
Right.
Which was so amazing.
Yes.
It's like, okay, this is the guy who's God, and this is the dude who's going to be merciful.
Oh my God,
so you
me,
better.
And I didn't pick that up. And that's not great writing.
It's amazing.
It's amazing
writing.
That this is all tied together.
It was Boy. So beautiful. That monologue was just fabulous. And Eddie does serve. He serves Neki, and he serves the show unlike any other character regarding the comic relief. Because if we didn't have him, mm-hmm. I think I might just turn blue from holding my breath the whole entire time with some of the tension that's building here. But every time he comes in, he just relieves us and brings us a little bit of laughter. And it's why he survived.
So he's going to have so he's going to be more involved in the business. And it's interesting when he says, okay, I need you to put all this money in this safe deposit box. He said, you know, whose name should I put in? He said, put in your name. I was going to suggest the same thing. So what do you guys, let me go around the table. What does that mean?
He seems very willing. He seems willing to help Neki in any way he can, but I just can't picture Eddie as being an evil sort of schemer.
So none of it, so there's no scheme. He wants it in his name, but it's for no other purpose other than that.
I think it was validation.
It's
a little bit that I can do this. That's what I was thinking, and someone else also thought that. So I must be thinking something correct.
I don't mean this to sound demeaning, because I think dogs are fabulous and wonderful. But he is Nucky's dog in that sense.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
He is.
This is what
loyal.
This is about: masters and servants.
And it's just he just wants that. I don't think he wants to do anything bad. I just think he wants the trust. He that's all he's
I'm
asking
take, I'll
for
take it
is
one,
your trust.
No, I'll take it one step further.
Okay.
I think because he is, you know, man's best friend, mm-hmm. And he is smart. He knows. So he's not just, like, loyal.
Yeah.
But he also, that is the best thing. Put it in my name. Don't put it in your name where you can get uncovered. Put it in my name. And that's why he is amazing. And he's going to be a great number one for Neki.
Yeah, and I have to say, for the writers, I mean, they could have killed him off so early and got a really simple, nice, strong arc out of that, and they've just kept him because he's just such a fabulous character, and the strongest ones are still standing, and I think that's why this is going to be the best season yet.
But this definitely makes me nervous with him in this vulnerable position. I don't want to see him in a situation with these gangsters.
That's
where,
why it's so good.
I know, and I want that moment, but I don't.
I think that he's already been shot up.
Right.
He's been through hell. I think he's not going to let you down.
Right.
When he's in that position.
So.
I don't think he's going to let you down.
Because it would be like seeing another dog get shot.
Aww. Yeah, we don't want
you know,
that.
And in the most respectful way.
Yeah.
He's adorable.
Let's move over to Chalky, and we see the new son-in-law and the son-in-law-to-be, the family, all come in, and we're planning the wedding, it appears like, right, with the daughter.
There was a ring on that finger, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yep, there was a ring. Mm-hmm.
So it's nice. So Chalky's getting his way that, you know, she's marrying a nice doctor. And again, in kind of a curveball, we see an African-American who is clearly, it seemed, educated and somewhat successful in the father-in-law to be, and I love seeing it.
Mm-hmm. I believe his name was Oliver?
Oliver, yes.
Oliver and Samuel?
Samuel was the son.
Oliver.
Sorry. I mean, they're a smart family. We've known that since the beginning. He's now...
But they must be wary of Chalky and him entering that family. They are not thrilled. When they showed the scene, and I know we'll get to that, but when Dr. Narcisse was up watching Chalky get his head rubbed, I thought that was going to be the father of the son-in-law.
No.
And I didn't want Chalky to then be looked down on even further. And so I was semi-relieved to see it was
They're not looking down. They just, it just seems like they don't want that around their son.
Right.
And again, it's just fantastic production design and costuming that tells the story without telling it. Just look at the outfit Chalky's wearing against the outfit the father-in-law-to-be is wearing.
It's almost like a clown, cheaper version on Chalky.
Right. And it's someone's more like trendy
it's
and
trying
just
to
right
be rich.
Where someone is much
right.
more like old money.
Right.
It's astounding. It's the class comparison is just it's so much fun to watch. And all he because the set work and the costume is so extraordinary, all he had to do is just glance and look. And I think he made a small suggestion that it was extravagant, but that was it. Nothing's ever forced here.
No.
And that's why it's so lovely.
And you see him backstage, of the club. He's so happy. He's so proud. He's talking to the help, the staff. Mm-hmm. Seems like he's a pretty good boss.
Mm-hmm.
And, out he comes. It's, black in the on stage, white in the house. He comes into the house, and there's one of the patrons there who's just kind of a loudmouth, drunken, obnoxious.
That guy.
But
he survived. He always is a different girl every season.
Like a new yeah. keeps
going through them.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
He's pushing all the buttons, and Chalky's not reacting, which is great. You feel like Dunn would react, but you feel Chalky's more evolved where he won't react.
And he has to be the businessman in this place.
Has to be. But we see it really gets put to the test later. But then the guy rubs his head, and we were all like, oh, all of our hearts just went to our stomachs, because it was just like this guy had a dream way ahead of himself, totally progressive, and then just to be deflated like that.
Right. In that moment when he was so happy.
Yeah. I was like, ah.
I know. It was a great turn. Yeah. It really was. It was so sad.
Yeah.
Moving on to who I think is going to be our supervillain this season, and which is why the show is so genius. Is an African-American supervillain in Dr. Narcisse. He's a Libyan. Thank you.
I don't think he would approve.
No, he wouldn't.
Which his name, corresponding to the way that his demeanor is, I think it has to do with Dr. Narcissist.
Oh.
That's because we don't know what he's a doctor of, and to me it just comes across as
I've worked very hard for it.
Yeah, a professional in the business of condescending.
Which is interesting because his first name's Valentine.
Right.
Put the little juxtaposition in there. But I loved – my favorite scene, actually, of the entire episode was of Nucky, Mr. White, and Dr. Narcisse in that room with the power struggle and just all the lines from servant to kings to who runs this and who has the power.
Well, let's back up a little bit before we get to that because because we see that Dr. Narcisse comes in with the whore. Emma.
Oh, yeah.
And what goes down there? It's the first game of chess, and it's Narcisse versus Chalky, and Chalky's like, he holds his ground. He protects his guy, Sweetback, and he's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. And the guy basically is like, okay.
It's almost like it's a whole nother level of game for Chalky all of a sudden.
It's a whole other level.
Yeah.
He's good enough not to punch the guy that's rubbing his forehead, whereas Sweetback would have.
Yeah.
He's good in that regard, but he's not, this is a whole other level.
And you can see him start to get flustered a bit there.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't like it. And it's going there the minute Jeffrey Wright, sorry, I'm forgetting the character's name.
Narcisse, Dr. Narcisse.
Yeah, Dr. Narcisse, says, please sit down. And it's his
right.
place.
Yeah. Right.
And you're like, oh, this is going to go really bad.
Oh, my goodness.
If he's comfortable in your house already. Ugh.
And now, so Sarah, take us to where they have the...
Am I allowed to fast forward?
Fast forward, baby. Nice.
Thank you. Well, now I lost my spot. But while we go back, and before that, we got the fact that he does want a piece of the house because he gets a piece of everything he's ever a part of. Or I believe, actually, that was after that.
But again, what I was saying was how progressive the show is, and at the same time, just how original. Because if you were going to, in your wildest dreams, paint an African-American to be a villain on this show, you would think he would be a black supremacist or not even that, but someone just who's violent and angry. And
like a chip.
You would think, right, that he would be like the anti-Chalky. Mm-hmm. And yet you're giving us this highly educated, very civilized person who's totally into separation of races. I mean, it's really sophisticated, and it's just something I didn't see.
No,
coming.
Not at all.
And the fact that I think he is our supervillain,
yes,
I think of this season.
I'm so excited.
But let's talk about so when they do sit and they have their meeting, and Chalky is just not equipped.
Our second game of chess.
Yes.
Okay. So
and
now
he
this
brings
is
in
Chalky and Nucky.
And Nucky.
And Chalky is just tossed to the side of the argument.
Yes.
Yeah.
He erupts. He loses his control. We finally get that emotional response that we've just seen hidden behind these stairs. Mm-hmm. And Nucky has to come in as a friend, or more than a friend, or less than a friend, or whatever he is. But he does say that. That he is passing the judgment, which gave him the ability to make the negotiations. Like, if Nucky had just been like, he's my friend, and really gone back to Chalky's level and gone on their normal relationship,
right,
and not kind of leveled up to Dr. Valentine, then it wouldn't have gone as well, even though... I need to rewind, guys, and read what I'm saying. It's making sense in my head, but no. It's not making sense when I'm speaking.
I think I get what you're saying. I think so. One of the things I found so interesting here, referring to the game of chess, is the way the men did not react to Emma's sob story. They were just...
It was all business, yeah.
She was just a pawn.
Yep.
Quite literally. They were like,
it.
All right, come in, act your part, and we're just going to move you aside. I mean, none of them were moved, and none of them believed it. Yet,
they all knew better.
Yet they still stuck with that story.
For Dr. Narcisse, it was an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Seized. Like, thank you. Thanks for 10% of the house.
And that's the easiest path that they can take, because if they challenge Dr. Narcisse, they obviously know it's going to go to places they don't even want to start to get involved in. So this is 10% is the lowest they can get rid of him at.
Yes.
In price or life.
And I think this goes back to what you were saying. Is, do you think Chalky even knew that this man wanted 10% or wanted a percentage of this house going into this meeting? Do you think he was thinking the negotiations were on a different level?
Yeah, he thought it was going to be his $5,000 probably.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he had no idea it was an actual percentage of his.
It was interesting that Chalky called Nucky and said, we've got a problem. We have no talent. For our, and he called him in. And it was really interesting the way Dr. Narcisse broke down who Nucky was and their relationship and the subtle disdain he had for your friends. Oh, your business partners.
Yeah.
And then, or you do business together. And he surmises things very quickly. But what was interesting is when he got very judgmental and he started talking about, spirits, when you mix, things get mixed, and he's like, it ends up, the potency slips away until nothing's left. And
a thing mixed is a thing weakened.
A thing mixed is a thing weakened. And so, again, genius writing, it works on the level of we're dealing with alcohol and prohibition, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing how the cheap alcohol is weakened and cut down, to make more money. And the lower rent the criminal, the worse the alcohol is. But then when we're talking about here, he's talking about race relations. And he's saying, we're not supposed to be friends.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to be lovers. Mm-hmm. We're not supposed to be cohabitating.
But he does identify Neki as also a king.
Exactly. But you know what? Yeah, it's right. You can have your kingdom. I've got mine. But we're not friends. We are not friends. We can never be friends. We can never intermarry. None of that. That's where he was coming from for me. And that's why we can, I don't want to jump. Can I jump ahead to the carriage ride out?
I want to jump in real quick.
Go ahead,
because what is interesting, and the writers do such a great job of that, is setting it up, is because they set him up as such an educated man who has come from Trinidad, who is now a doctor, we don't expect him to have that world's view.
Right.
We expect him to be far more progressive. And then when...
You expect him to be like, thank you, Mr. Lincoln, for freeing us. You know, you would think he would be like, that's the knee jerk of like, thank you for allowing me to exist. Thank you for allowing me to get an education. No, he's evolved like, no, this is what I am, who I am. That's who you are. You stay there. I stay here. That's it. We're not friends.
It's a very strong point of view.
He was closer to being friends with Neki than he was to being friends with Chalky, because Chalky was a servant and he was a king. So he
respect, not friends.
Right, right. But respect with Chalky.
Exactly. And I think, and even the way he walked out on Dem, you know, on Sweetback, what he even said to him, oh, you're the.
In question.
You're the, yeah. The Negro in question. It's like, oh, how's that knee to the balls?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I love Sweetback.
He's a brilliant actor.
I think he's great, but I also think he's great. He's a great number one.
Absolutely. Again, there are themes of loyalty and family and brotherhood, and Sweetback really is Chalky's brother. I mean, there's no. At this point, it feels like a mirrored relationship to Neki and Eli, and those are the bonds that cannot be broken.
Or Neki and Eddie? Would you say Neki and Eddie? Because it's more of a it's more of a servant, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
That's true.
That's true. That's true too.
That's
but
what
these
I feel
are
like.
These are the bonds that can't be broken. But the fun is every episode trying to test them and trying to break them.
Right.
And that's why we just keep coming back for more.
We love it.
Go. Where were we going?
So we go into. So we're in the car ride out of town. He's gotten his 10%, and Chalky's like, "What?" You know, mm-hmm. and you hear the guy say, "Dr. Narcisse," like, "Well, we'll see how it goes. Mm-hmm. Is he going to get that 10%? Maybe there's more money to get. Who knows? I mean, this guy is just, you know, he probably hates the fact that Chalky is running a club in name only, and that Nucky's the one making the money, so maybe he needs to get more. I don't know. We're going to find out, because we'll find out more about what's up with Harlem and the owner of the Harlem club that he works for.
The Cotton Club?
The
Cotton Club, yeah.
How do you think he would have gotten in on... This question might not be relevant, but how do you think that Dr. Narcisse would have gotten in on Chalky's club if this woman didn't do this? Do you think that he was waiting for this one for the?
I think so. Yeah,
he knew that was like a routine, and then he knew. Okay, then I'll get in their business.
Well, maybe not that specifically would happen, but definitely he was going to get his hooks.
Exactly.
In there.
So he can seize any opportunity that's put in front of him, and that's put like when his performers. It's obviously in their contracts that he owns the people, he owns the place, and that's why he's been pulled in.
And what's going to be madness is when we meet this Oni Madden guy who owns the Cotton Club, because who God only knows their relationship.
Are they
Neki and Chalky in their world.
Yeah, no, I believe Dr. Narcisse would have created trouble for him in any way, shape, or form. But that's what gangsters do. I mean, in the old neighborhoods, you know, if they would come in and ask a shop if they needed protection.
Right.
And then if the shop said no, then they would, you know,
break the place up
and then say, oh, do you need protection now? And so it's the same way.
Right.
Just trying to get a piece of the pie.
Well, it's so interesting. He's driving out with Emma. What's her name?
Not with Emma. The devil woman.
Yeah, what's her name?
I thought it was...
God.
It was just
we're going to get croaked. We were having such a great episode. 48 minutes in. Yeah. We were playing a perfect game, and now we're going to get croaked.
Emma, too. And,
okay,
and
so fancy. You guys.
Can
you guys just quick explain to the fans what goes on here?
Forgive us.
We go up 10 minutes after the show. There's many characters here. We throw in the subtitle with DirecTV just to be able to catch all the dialogue, catch all characters. It's really hard.
And my mind's spinning so fast tonight that I can't even think straight.
So anyway, we apologize. Needless to say, she says something clearly that makes us...
I believe it involved a tree and some rope.
Yes. And that may be what we should do. And it's funny, his driver, who's his number one, who I think we're going to see more of, Dr. Narcisse's driver, he looks up in the mirror at him. That's
it's
the
time.
Signal. Yep. Stop the car. And out she goes on a rope.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't sorry to see.
And she lands where we were at the top of the show. Her body
where
is...
Where God is merciful.
Yep, there we go.
Mm-hmm. And with the sign there that says the future, and you have this dead whore laying there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the future is bleak, yep. Ladies and gentlemen.
And right now we have two kings. We have Dr. Narcisse and we have Necky, and that's it. And they are...
By the way, who's saying... I'm saying Narcisse, you're saying Narcisse.
See, I'm sorry.
I don't know. Maybe you're right.
Narcisse, I think.
It should be Narcisse.
Again, more stuff we'll get terrorized for.
Sorry, guys.
Put on the list.
But I thought that was interesting. Like, no, you're out.
Yep. She was gone.
And when she was laying there, I don't want to get too dark, but... It was very similar looking to me in a certain way of the Black Dahlia and the way her body was displayed. Semi, not really. I mean, that could be totally wrong because the Black Dahlia's body was cut in half. However, her legs were semi open, and it was in a neighborhood that was being developed at the time. That's where they dropped Black Dahlia's body. And this is
it. Did look like the Black Dahlia? Yeah. That's what I was thinking of. What? Do you think that was purposeful? Because it totally looked like the Black Dahlia in the 50s was this, or maybe he's in the late 40s, this young actress in Hollywood who
actually wasn't an actress.
Wanted to be an actress,
no.
Didn't she?
Nope. She was actually a runaway from home, and she went to work for her father in Long Beach from Massachusetts or one of
from,
the...
Yeah, she's from Boston.
But she came out to work for her father, and her father essentially said, you can't stay with me. And so she was just traveling around, but she was never trying to be an actress. She was sleeping with men, not to get on a tangent, not sleeping with men, I'm sorry. She was going on dinners with men to eat and dates, but she wasn't. I went on a tour around Los Angeles. It was called the Black Dahlia Tour. But where they dropped her is now, I can't remember the neighborhood, like Sentinella type of neighborhood over in LA. But at the time,
I actually am such a nerd that I went to where it is. It's like a house now. You know,
it's a house. There's a lawn. But anyway,
I think we have to go on this tour.
Yeah,
both of us are like, what's
it's
going
a very
on?
Cool
no, we'll
tour.
Do it. Let's do it for Halloween.
Okay,
it's a very
seriously,
cool tour.
I love ghost tours.
Yeah. No, it's really. Creepy and sad and weird.
Yeah,
her
and
story.
Intriguing and mysterious.
And they keep going.
But basically, they dropped her body at the time where it was a new development with like the sign, you know,
oh
the new
God.
Housing development. So it
no
was just
way.
Very
you're right.
similar.
And when I saw her, it wasn't because of the new development, but the positioning of her body, the way she was
legs
white,
open.
Red dress,
and looked red dress, and she was. It looked like things were severed. I couldn't tell. It happened really fast.
It did seem that way,
but that was
before.
The Black Dahlia was severed from
in the,
was the pelvis, the torso,
and she was completely drained. Of any blood.
And didn't
oh,
she,
God.
And
oh, God.
Di- no, and didn't...
Sorry.
And didn't,
I don't know if I can go on
and,
this tour.
And didn't he carve... didn't what, her mouth get carved in to make it look like
a smile? Yeah. Yeah.
You guys are getting really morbid.
Sorry.
Yeah, anyway. But
she did look very symbolic.
It was my knee-jerk to say, oh, Black Dahlia. But
yeah.
I was like, wait, that's in the 50s.
The
oh, the 40s.
Yeah.
But you're right.
Yeah.
And in the new, now the new development, I'm sure there was something there.
So do you think she's going to haunt the future of Vader because it's his development or for everyone in
it
general?
It could curse it. I mean, it could make it a bad deal.
No, I think you guys are right. Like, no, there's a dead body there. Absolutely. I think maybe.
And what are the chances that, you know, they didn't plan to drop her on you. They didn't specifically know that this was happening, this new construction.
By the way, how smart was Dr. Narcisse to spell it all out? We've got a black man, we've got a white woman, we've got, you know, like basically you guys have no case, like, you know, using it all in reverse to his advantage.
Again, it's a whole nother level. It's a whole nother level of game that he's playing.
Servant pretending to be king, as he says to Nucky.
Which
I mean, to Chucky.
Dr. Narcisse could be just doing the exact same, pretending to
for
be a servant.
Oni Madden, for Oni
right.
Madden. We
right.
don't know this.
We haven't met him yet.
That's why, oh,
but
God, this goddamn show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So good.
So good.
We didn't even get to Gretchen Mull today and any of that.
Well, we should go. We'll go into predictions and we'll talk about them too.
But we should probably talk about some things that we have before predictions.
Oh, you know what? Let's do predictions and then we'll do. No, really? Oh, look at that. Sarah just calling it down. So you want to go to catches of the week?
We need to. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So let's go to last
Mike
week's catches.
August. We have to like praise him because he's fantastic.
Saves us every week. Bails us out.
He just can find the best details of these episodes that. So I want to bring forth a couple of his from last week. For instance, Capone mentioned last week that Woodrow Wilson was croaking, which happened in February of 1924. So that's kind of helping us. We're looking for placing the exact time and period. That's kind of a key line that he found. Also, the bar in the opening scene was called Tippecanoe. And in the Battle of Tippecanoe, which I'm going to butcher this name, which involved Tecumseh, I believe it's said, and his brother he thinks symbolizes Nucky and Eli, because they were both warriors that ultimately retreated against General William Henry Harrison's men. And he also thought that the fact that they tried to recruit the five civilized tribes may relate to Capone's Five Points Gang. Ooh. So with Tippecanoe, he's relating not only the warriors being brothers of Nucky and Eli, but also bringing in Chicago in that reference. Also, in case you're wondering, Fight for the Cherry in White is a reference to Temple University, which is a line in the show. As well, one of the main things that he was noticing was the strength of the women. Also, color schemes, that a lot of the women in last week's episode were wearing green, including Jillian, Eli's wife, all the Onyx girls. So just looking at costuming, displays of color. Also for...
Green's interesting, too, because if you notice, that's a color that we don't really see a lot of on this show. So it may, there's something there. I think that's the... usually green's money, and it's growth. So just,
and it's envy.
And it's envy. So there's a lot of things that are there. I see the growth part because I think the women are...
growing stronger?
Yes.
Yeah.
And for you, Mr. History Guy over there, the dancer is named Eldon Grover, shown in last week's episode. He thinks could be a homage to the legendary tap dancing duos such as the Nicholas Brothers! You mentioned
so
before.
Oh, yes. So okay, I'll let you finish, and then I want to talk about Nicholas Brothers.
Oh, are you, and all the exciting cameos you might get in the Cotton Club?
Okay, well, the Nicholas Brothers, I'd have to check the date. So we're in 24.
We're thinking, yeah.
I met the last living one several times. He only died about, I don't know. Hey, Stephen, can you look up the Nicholas Brothers, please?
We need some facts.
And let me know when the older one had died. He had died just about 5 or 6 years ago. Aww. And it was a great story because he was actually in an old age home, but was very alert, very much himself. And a young woman who was a fan found him. They struck up a relationship. And a very pretty woman who I believe was in her 40s, you know, and she took him out of the home and they got married.
Oh.
And so the last few years of his life, he was with her.
Oh, I love that.
And
that's a movie.
And I remember just meeting him. But the Nichols Brothers are in a movie in and of themselves.
Yeah.
And so when I saw them, I was like, God, I wonder if that's Nichols Brothers. It, you know, time-wise, if they were really young, maybe like 17 or 18, it could work. But I didn't want to say. The Nichols Brothers... amazing tap dancing doing it, and I knew one of them, so that was...
The last one died. Oh, sorry.
The older one died in January 2006.
Yep, like I said. And the young one died in 2000. Yeah, in 1914. So they would have been like 10. They would have been young. But this is where they're maybe stretching it a little bit. That's why I was like, I wanted to be the Nicholas Brothers, but they would have been too young. Yeah. But anyway, it's probably based on...
And one more thing. This is more of a question, but... there was a reference to Supervisor Elliot with Prohibition. So he's saying perhaps that's Ness. Kevin, I think you had some thoughts about that, didn't you?
Well, I mean, you know, Elliot Ness is the, you know, person, at least in folklore, that brought down Capone. As time has gone on, Hollywood decided to, you know, when they did the series The Untouchables in the 60s, he was the one guy that... it was easiest to pin it all on him that he did it, and they based it on him, and that kind of... you know, it became deeper in folklore. It's not 100% true that he's the one that did it, but with this show, now that we're dealing with Hoover, you never know. Supervisor Elliot could be the guy.
Well, so. We finally met Elliot this week. So last week he was mentioned.
Oh, he was in the room. That's right. He was in the room with so.
And he was in the room with Hoover and with.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen. We'll see where that's going to go. Okay, so what? Anything else before we go to predictions?
We just need to thank him and ask Mike, send us more.
Oh, he will. Mike's the best.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
They flash now. Look at that.
Yes, see our... So you iTunes listeners, go over to YouTube and see our lights flash. Okay, so we're going to Tampa next week.
Am I totally missing something? What's in Tampa?
I don't know, but I love it because I want to see Florida, what it looked like back in 24. I'm excited. But you
there's
know.
A lot of Art Deco architecture in like the Miami area, so I'm obviously was hopping. But I'll love the buildings down there.
Yeah, but Tampa, I know it's Tampa like different. Farmland.
But what's in Tampa?
I don't know. We're gonna find out.
I feel like we've got a new business venture coming.
Eli said, he said, "Let me should I bring something back for the kids." Eli says, "Bring oranges," and Nucky says, "No, they're too heavy to carry." So there's definitely something there.
Oh my gosh, you said that and it made me think of drugs, and I thought we were
maybe no, no, that's
business.
How smart you are, Sarah Banana.
No,
that's amazing.
Because
next year, because next week it's heroin, all that stuff comes up. There you go.
Yeah, boom.
You are one you smart white broad.
Yeah, you connected the dots.
Loving it.
I'm gonna be so wrong, and then I'm gonna feel
so
like
it's interesting because
week.
The whole heroin thing, and now we're gonna see Jillian next week with Ron Livingston.
I love
from
Ron
the Piggly
Livingston.
Wiggly.
Oh, he's amazing. They're just bringing the best actors.
You know, you know what else
I mean,
is
they
weird
have from the start?
The Piggly Wiggly just this week sold. Did you read the news?
Really?
A bunch of their stores just sold. So it's just kind of typical of this show. Interesting coincidence.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see how that relationship develops. I've got no predictions.
With Mr. Piggly Wiggly?
Yeah.
What else are we going to see next week?
Ooh, I don't know. Somebody, anybody, go, because I don't know. Sarah.
What's happening with Richard?
Yep.
He failed to complete his mission.
Right.
That he was supposedly paid for. I'm like, did his contractor track him down already? If so, that was very fast. Like, how did that death already happen?
I think someone else was hired. I'm not sure.
It just happened very quickly.
Yeah.
So there was no tracking down. We didn't see any investigation. It's like someone almost knew.
Right, like someone else had been hired at the same time.
Well, they knew that he wasn't dead, and then they came in and saw the guy there, and then killed the guy, and then saw the receipt on the floor,
right? I think something's
right?
going to happen where they come Pretty to simple. Richard's sister's house, and Richard's sister kicks ass somehow.
I think it's going to be okay. It could be a gateway
but be thrown into something.
But it could be a gateway to pull Richard in deeper, so he can help pay her bills or whatever. You know, again, he can't get away from this. I don't know.
And the chances that he would be asked to kill the person that his sister has to pay bills to is too coincidental to not have this go much further.
That's true.
I don't know. I don't even think he has to pay bills to that person. That person
they,
was just
they just found that,
up,
that in the book.
Right?
Oh.
They found that in the book. Okay. Uh-huh. You're like, whoa.
We saved the day. That would have been three things they would have terrorized us for.
Sorry, guys. I'm very curious what's going to happen with Capone and just the voting. I think he's just going to keep conquering Cicero and Chicago.
Okay, but what happens to, where's Margaret?
I want Margaret to come back, and I heard
gone.
What you said.
She's
last
gone.
She's
wait.
Eventually,
Bethany, is she gone? Do you know something we don't know?
No, I don't know anything you don't know. But I am just predicting because we're in predictions that she's gone.
I need to check IMDb and see if she's on any.
Yeah, we need to find out the scam. Yeah. You guys, because we're over an hour.
Oh
where do we find you guys? Let's go around the table.
You can find me I have a podcast on podcast1.com, and it's called Ask Women, and it's podcast1.com/ask-women. So make sure you go there and follow us on Twitter at Ask Women Podcast.
Fabian.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. You can find me at Bethany with an IE or at my Tumblr page, Literary Girls.
Literary Girls.
Yeah.
You can find me here. This is where I am.
Really? There's no at Sarah Stratton.
You ask me this every week. It's not
and every week I forget. Anyway, you guys.
No, I do not have a Twitter.
All right. We love you guys. Please rate and comment on iTunes and do the same at YouTube and tell a friend. And we'll see you back next week.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Buzz you later.
After our Strutton.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.